accept my love. Don't test my love, 'cause maybe I don't love you all that much. Don't ask what kind of music I'm gonna play tonight. Just stay a while, hear for yourself a while. And if you must put me in a box, make sure it's a big box, with lots of windows and a door to walk through, and a nice hot chimney, so we can burn, burn, burn everything that we don't like, and watch the ashes fly up to heaven, maybe on the way to India. I'd like that. All the ancient kings came to my door. They said, you want to be an ancient king too? I said, oh yes, very much, but I think my timing's wrong. They said, time is relative, or did you misread Einstein? I said, you really mean it? They said, what do you think we come here for? Our goddamn health or something? Everybody's waiting for the Messiah. The Jews are waiting, Christians are waiting, also the Muslims. It's like everybody's waiting. They've been waiting a long time. I know how I hate to wait, like even for a bus or something, an important phone call. So I can just imagine how darned impatient everybody must be getting. So I think it's time now, time to reveal myself. I am the Messiah. I am the Messiah. Yes, I think you heard me right. I am the Messiah. I was gonna wait till next year, build up the suspense a little, make it a really big surprise, but I could not resist. It's like when you get a really big secret, you're just bursting to tell someone. It was sort of like that with this. And now that I've told you, I feel this great weight lifted. Dr. Nussbaum was right. He's my therapist. To get it out in the open. I spent 10 whole days in Jerusalem, Jerusalem, sweet Jerusalem. And all I ate was olives, nothing but olives, mountains of olives. It was a good 10 days. I like olives. I like you. Tell you that I love you, don't test my love, accept my love, don't test my love, 'cause maybe I don't love you all that much.
Hello, my fabulous, fabulous listeners, and welcome to yet another episode of Bloodline. I am your host, Corey, DJ. Fresh Youth 2000, and with me in the studio tonight is a return guest, Ariel, and our very special guest representing the youth of America, Jake.
Hi.
Jake is a young man involved in the pre-college program here in Carnegie Mellon University, and he's going to talk about the internet, sex, and various issues relating to youth relationships and the internet. So, welcome.
Hi.
Actually, I just interrupted this fabulous conversation you and Ariel were just having when you were talking about, what was it, your first internet sexual encounter? No.
No, first experience with internet pornography.
Yeah, I've had
age
no...
Age 12.
Yeah, no encounter. My first, tell you a story again, my first, I guess, pornography experience would have been when a friend of mine came up to me. I was over at his house. It was probably, I think, when we were... 12, I believe, where he came over and was like, oh, yeah, check this out. And he had sort of a few images on his hard drive of pornography. And we sort of looked at it. I was like, wow, that's cool. And later on, I remember we were having this whole actually debate about how we can compress the data enough so it's on a disk and bring it home.
So were these images that you would never? I mean, so what were these like? Were they things that you couldn't have gotten any other way, or did you have like a
Playboy-ish or something stronger?
something weaker, if anything else.
Really? So I mean, can you describe them, if you remember? Well, really?
I don't remember
have the
very
files
well.
Somewhere?
No, I sort of, yeah, that sort of went through another time where I got, like, really annoyed, and I got scared. I was like, oh, and I came over, and I ripped up the desk. I'm like, no, these things should not exist. And,
You're afraid your parents would find them, or there was you just...
Not that. I
thought they were immoral, sort of?
Probably more of that than anything else. Yeah, not even more. Like, it didn't, like, offend me. I was sort of like, you know, hey, you know, I shouldn't have these. You know, this is wrong. And, yeah, I'm not quite sure what sort of made me get distressed. But anyway. Yeah, it's sort of, although it's one of the things where, I mean, I don't think I was shocked at the time. I mean, I'd seen, I guess, a little bit of nudity before then. And it wasn't, it wasn't all that shocking. Where it's like, well, this is cool, but, I mean, we didn't spend all day looking at them, and,
Did your friend have a color monitor? Or what was the... I'm curious, what
the
were,
image
like,
quality concerns.
Yeah, actually, I mean, they were, I suppose, high quality. You'd see they were probably on the monitor.
So was it some female posing, or was it some sort of intercourse? Was it,
the female posing. That was about it.
Had she seen comparable stuff off the internet? At that point?
No, and I should also say that he got these off the internet, although he didn't get these in sort of the means that people get them off the internet now. I mean, again, the internet was somewhat new, and not a whole lot of people were really on at that point. He may have actually gotten even off something like CompuServe and not necessarily the internet directly, although I'm sure it's where it came from.
This is like 5 years ago?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. We were already in grad school.
that's actually more than a little bit disturbing. I actually, as listeners know, I actually have over a gigabyte of pornography on my hard disk that I haven't even looked at yet because I have a constant porn stream coming into my computer. But that's because technology has advanced so much since then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the capacity of discs was back then, but your idea was to take this little cache of fabulous porn and take it home.
Yeah, well, I mean,
and,
the big issue.
Did you have a computer? Could you have displayed these files on your own computer? Did they have computers back then? I mean, did you have a computer at your house?
Yeah, I did. Really? Yeah, I've always been I'm a geek. I'm openly a geek. I'm very happy about that. Yeah. So I've always been using I've been using computers for a very long time. And, yeah, I mean, I could have. Actually, the big problem was that we probably could have fit them all into a disk, only I didn't have a program to view them, so we had to convert them into a form, which I didn't need to use a program for, which means there only could be fit a couple on a disk.
So did you have a computer at home? Did you have a modem? I mean, were you, like, online all the time?
I think that was right around the time we got a modem, when I got in America, well, we started getting on America Online, mm-hmm. And that was, I was sort of, with these pictures, I was like, well, this is pretty cool, but I wasn't all that active. I, like, immediately say, you know, I'm going to go out and find a billion more of these, I'm going to go out and get through this. And the computer that I was using that on was actually a black and white monitor laptop that was somewhat slow, and the connection was very slow. So it wasn't, I'm sure maybe if I really put my mind to it, I could have, but I didn't know a whole lot then either.
So how long was it before you had some other encounter with sex on the internet?
It was a good amount of time. And the friends sort of kept me with a sort of a supply of this, or at least had around. So that was, it mean, there's more of a, that's where I think I got probably most of it for a while. I'm really not quite sure when the next time it was. I started going to a private boarding school when I was 6 years, when I went to sixth grade. And with boarding schools comes Playboys and so forth. And, yeah, and so I mean, I'm sure that there was that around.
I was ready to finish that sentence. Well, with boarding schools comes, you know, sodomy, degradation, and the lash, right? I mean, yeah. Is that not true?
That's not exactly
British
true.
Boarding schools.
Yeah, I mean, you're thinking of British private schools, you know, the movie If and stuff.
If. I'm actually not aware of this movie.
It's sort of like a cult film where it's nothing having to do with sex. It's all a bunch of kids getting beat up by people they're in charge of for the private school.
Interesting. Okay, I'm sorry. So I derailed you. Something about, there was some important, you were talking about boarding school?
I mean, that's where there could be a lot of, a lot of pornography.
That's where you were really introduced to conventional porn.
Right, yeah. I mean, although there it was...
But the older students didn't abuse you in any measurable way? I was disappointed.
Well, I mean, the point was, it was a school for kids that were dyslexic. I'm dyslexic, and ADD, probably more ADD kids. Mm-hmm. So, and there was also, it was also a very small boarding portion. I mean, I think probably all the boarding guys would have equaled maybe 45, and no one above ninth grade is that much. So it wasn't sort of forced in this huge open, you know, be here at 6 for dinner type thing. It was also very controlled and very supervised. And
this was before Ritalin was in vogue for controlling ADD or what?
There was Ritalin there. I mean, sort of ever since I started going to boarding school, people bragged about sort of whether they're on Ritalin or not, and tried, I think, use that as an excuse if anything else. Like, I can do whatever I want. I'm on Ritalin. You know, leave me alone. I'm on Ritalin. I always thought it was kind of stupid, personally.
Yeah, I should try that. God damn. So anyway, where were we? Okay, so you're in boarding school. You're exposed to all this stuff. I'm trying to segue rapidly to some sort of humiliating personal story, but I'm having trouble. Maybe Ariel can help me out here.
A humiliating personal story of yours?
No, of our guest, Jake's here. Oh, by the way, I know I'll do. If you want to call in, please feel free. The numbers are 268-WRCT and 621-WRCT, and you can also access us on the web. The pornography free site is http://loveline.wrct.com. Your comments and feedback are welcome. So the reason I asked about the modem before was I was wondering how much interacting you were doing with other sort of computer geeks in the country and across the planet.
Not the time. I don't really know when I was introduced to the concept of cyber sex. I remember even thinking, you know, well, this seems pretty boring. I mean, there's nothing real involved, and in most cases, there's not even pictures involved. I mean, what's up with this? It's just text.
Right. It sort of seems like more of a hassle than masturbation is. Right?
Yeah. So it just sort of seemed like, you know, this is pretty boring. I think there was a couple times where I tried to, you know, where I tried to sort of get in with someone, and, you know, occasionally someone, a girl or probably a guy imitating a girl, would be, you know, say, oh, well, I've done it before, and then they leave or something like that. I never really tried that hard. I never really cared. I always thought it was not that interesting.
I've never quite figured it as... I mean, maybe I have too firm a grip on reality or something, but I used to play a lot with CompuServe when I was younger, the really old days, and I used to spend a lot of evenings in their little chat room, in their CB simulator, when it was still called that.
It doesn't exist anymore.
Oh,
so.
Okay. I was actually blessed with a free account due to where I was working, and so it was pretty easy to just be on all the time. And I could never, I mean, people, it was just sort of this alternate reality for a lot of people, and I could never quite get into it that deeply. And so, you know, I tried a couple of fumbling attempts at cyber sex, but, you know, maybe I'm not creative enough. I mean, it doesn't seem like you have to be a good writer, or at least you have to be specifically creative in some unusual way, or what? I mean, what happened? I mean, have you done this, Ariel?
I haven't done this, but I know somebody who does it a fair amount, and I think I at least have the impression that part of the kick from it is getting feedback that you can please somebody else, even though it's, you know, by word choice and timing and typing speed.
I see. So that, no doubt, is the essence of why it doesn't work for me. We actually had a guest on here. I don't remember what his code name was, but Blackhawk or something. But he who was a big cybersex fan, and I believe he used to do a lot of cyber sex from his office here on the CMU campus. I don't know if that was particularly relevant, but okay. So did you make friends on the internet? I mean,
not really. I mean, sort of, you always hear all these stories about people having all these great times and talking away and spending all hours on there. I was sort of wondering where all those people were. Because I try getting in there and talking about things, but it always seemed I never really got to speak to anyone more interesting than sort of like, you know, where are you from here? What's the weather like? It's like this. I mean, I always just found the whole talking concept pretty boring.
Mm-hmm.
Although it sort of, it helped a lot of people. I could tell from my mother and my stepfather, and for a while, I mean, they weren't having any type of relationship online. They knew each other social all the time, but that was a way of talking without calling. And I think also there they were living a pretty far distance apart, or relatively far, so it's actually cheaper.
Right. Your mother and your stepfather met online?
No, they did not meet online. No, by no way did they do. That was sort of, I think they were just using AOL and talking.
There was a period of separation or something, and they were communicating via AOL?
No, it wasn't even a period of separation. I mean, they just sort of met each other, and I mean,
they courted online.
Yeah, it was sort of like, you know, well, I'll call you, but, you know, let's save some money. I'll be online, and I'll just speak like this. Very, very boring, I suppose. Using it for a pretty good reason, though, for you just typing instead of talking.
I don't know.
Which, I mean, I can tell you sort of something more modern, and that's where I have a couple of friends that use services on the internet to have relationships that are pretty far distance apart in several states.
Someone seduced me through email once.
Really?
I had met him in real life, though. I had met him briefly in real life, and then a month and a half later, he sent me email.
And it only took one?
No, it took a series. It took another month and a half or so of email.
That's a pretty impressive
email.
So how does that go? What kind of seduction was this? Sounds like a lot of painful poetry.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't poetry. He wrote really good email. He sounded very interesting in the way he wrote, and he made his interest in me seem very interesting.
That's fantastic. Well, you know, I think my doomed little seduction that just happened a couple months ago was primarily over email.
Oh, is it doomed now?
Well, it's doomed because, so to remind our listeners, I was able to fulfill every homosexual man's fantasy by actually seducing my best friend in college about 2 months ago. And you can read all about that on the website, loveline.wrct.com. Also known as, we're Sex Talk now, sextalk.wrct.com. But anyway, the point is most of our conversations actually took place over email, and I would actually write him long, kind of thoughtful, amusing little stories about my life and whatever pathetic thing I was involved in. And we just exchanged a lot of email, and his interest became more and more evident, and finally, we had to go have sex. And so, but indeed, I mean, it's interesting. We did actually, we hardly talked on the phone at all. So I guess I'm actually, we're sharing a moment here. I actually had something similar happen.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Mine was consummated in Boston as well, so there are other similarities.
Wow. So, you know, Boston is a sex vortex. It's sort of not surprising. Right? I mean, interesting. Maybe it was the same person. I mean, wouldn't that be chilling? Chilling coincidence?
I think not.
Time for a PSA. If you've considered adopting a child, come learn more about older child adoption, which includes older children, sibling groups, and children with disabilities, on July 21st from 7 to 9 p.m. The Three Rivers Adoption Council will be holding a series of informational meetings in their downtown offices at 307 4th Avenue, Suite 710. Write that down, 307 4th Avenue, Suite 710. For reservations or for information about the meetings or adoption in general, please contact Susan Matei at 412-471-8722. That's 471-8722. Anyway.
Well, the problem, I guess, with what you're just saying is that, I mean, it worked out well because, I mean, you both knew each other and could get together in real life, but that's not, for a lot of these relationships, or not relationships, but for a lot of things we're having is it's just two people imitating someone else where they would never be able to get together in real life because that would expose the real identity and trade.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it sort of depends on which – we're sort of talking about two different kinds of things, I think. I mean, certainly there's the cyber sex thing as an end in itself, you know, strictly as a fantasy kind of way of getting off with somebody entirely in cyberspace. And then there's this kind of phenomenon of just long-term relationships in general, you know, meeting interesting people who don't happen to be geographically coincident, right?
Mm.
So, I have to say, goddamn, it's time for another gratuitous swear word. I certainly have seen this effect on kind of, you know, I mean, it's sort of the common example is, you know, gay teens who, like, are living in some sort of oppressive area, you know, can meet other sort of supportive people elsewhere, right? So it might be easier to find resources or find little gay friends, you know, living far away. But I don't know if teenagers were part of the ordinary sort of dominant sexual paradigm, still need to use the internet to meet other teens.
Like two of my friends that live far away apart, they have it's a relationship. I doubt it's sexual though. I mean, well, actually, I know two people. One is sexual, one doesn't. The one that doesn't, but they very well could, and but they pretty much just use it as a medium of talking and having a good time because that wouldn't be possible over the phone, because of, you know, the phone bills would be too expensive. People that have sex, I do know, are a bit more into it.
It's a slightly left field question. Have you ever pretended to be somebody else online? Pretended to be older or female or?
Yeah, but that was around the whole point where I was trying to. When I was trying to, you know, have, you know, a relationship or sort of cyber sex together, I tried a couple of times, but it was pretty boring. Like, I mean,
what did you try?
I think probably try being a girl. But you know, that's
really.
I find it all really, really boring, and that was sort of like everyone else is trying it. Why shouldn't I? I mean, you know, and if I fooled anyone, I'd be pretty surprised.
Have you ever tried being female online?
I don't. No, I don't think so. No, but I mean, it's suddenly. I wonder why not. I mean, that's actually a completely fantastic idea.
I've never tried being male, but I've concealed my gender entirely and refused to tell.
Yeah, well, I mean, it does. It clearly corresponds with, you know, yet another homosexual fantasy, of course, which is to seduce straight men. But wow. Well, but I guess the only problem is that everybody. That's the number one suspicion when you meet a girl on the internet is that she's not actually a girl. It's this whole what was that movie, the Last Seduction? It's that whole scenario.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, I can't actually. It'll ruin the movie if you haven't seen it, so I'll just have to let that be a mystery. So no kinky sort of internet stories ending in disaster for you personally?
None. I never really went very far with talking back and forth, and I mean, after a while, I totally dropped America Online and I started getting right into the full-blown internet. And there is similar things to AOL, but they're a bit more complicated. Not that I couldn't use them, I just, it's like, why bother?
So do you ever have a problem with unwanted come-ons or people sending you suggestive email you don't want?
No. I can't say I have. I guess spam, but I guess that's not very seductive or anything.
Uh-huh.
So, as a representative of the teen internet generation, what do you think about all these young people having access to all of this, ready access to, sex and willing sexual partners and pornography and, basically there's a ton of both information and people out there waiting to interact with you in all kinds of unseemly ways. Is this a good social phenomenon?
I think overall it's good. It's certainly not any. I don't think it's bad. I should say it'd probably be a better way of putting it. I think that if kids can see or learn or be able to do something without actually having to do it in real life over the internet or learn something, then that's better. I mean, the less teenagers having sex and having kids and getting AIDS and stuff, the better. And if that means that they're going on online and seeing pornography instead of going to a bedroom and seeing each other, then that's fair. Yeah, I think that's a bit better. And also, I mean, there's just
more
a wealth of
tunnel, less syphilis.
And there's also just a wealth of information for kids that are confused or curious, and I mean, can never think of themselves going to a bookstore. There are bookstores that would even sell stuff that they're interested in, and just being able to find out, any questions they may have. I mean, not a whole lot of kids are comfortable asking their parents stuff. I mean, I'm one of the few exceptions where I am, but not. I think most kids are not. And if they can get information online that may help prevent something that could be possibly very bad in the future, then it's great. With that, though, I think the parents need to really teach their kids about sex and about what's out there, and not to be afraid of it and not to think of it necessarily as an evil thing, and to really understand it. I think that's sort of necessary for this all to happen, so it's not it doesn't have a negative effect, which it could.
So, if I were to select you as the person that was going to be deciding the country's national policy on the internet, what would be your level of filtering, can see? Especially with regard to, predators and, I don't know, predators and information about sex, guns, and drugs.
First of all, I am totally against censorship, pretty much both on the internet and almost totally in sort of real life. I think censorship is really a bad way to go. And if you're telling a kid you can't see this, it's only going to make them want to get more. So I don't think that's going to help anything.
The problem I have with this argument, I think, is that, there are limits to children's creativity, and the more they see, the more creative they can get. So, if they never imagine that it's possible to do something really disturbing or unseemly, they might never think of it on their own. But if they see it in some cool MPEG video, or read about it in some internet group, they might. Ariel's course.
I think the amount of kids are gonna get a great idea to do something because they saw it online is not gonna be that huge. And I think that there is also, to a certain extent, you have kids in the classroom that are gonna take care of that by themselves by saying, that's disgusting. How do you do this? I mean, homosexuality is one of the things where kids are scared and to a lot of extent when they're little, and I think that probably it would help ease the fear, because they wouldn't need to, they could see it online without exposing it. But I think it would also scare enough kids away from really thinking of malicious things. And there's no way of blocking this stuff. I mean, if it's out there, it's out there, and kids are going to be able to get it. So why not try to teach your kids early on?
No, that's not strictly true.
Right?
I mean you could easily can imagine ways that would block 90% of it.
Fine. I strongly disagree with that.
Well, I mean, it's technically obvious, right? I mean, you could do it. I mean, it would take legislation and money, but it's not as though it's impossible.
What's the point of blocking 90% of it?
Well, I mean, that's right. So, for example, it's actually kind of difficult right now to get child pornography.
But
that's not technically.
So that's working.
That's not technical blocking. That's because the penalties for
for
it are so severe.
I'm saying some combination, whatever it is, of technological, legal, and financial incentives can bring you 90% of the way there. And the only reason I say 90% is because 90% solutions are often feasible, and 100% solutions are often not. So,
well, I mean, financially, the online sex industry is making a lot of money, and I don't think, like, with child pornography, that's one thing where it's so not accepted by society, where I don't think that there's not the bulk of money to be made like there is in general online pornography, which there is a lot of money to be made. So first of all, I think that people would there'd be lots of people trying to stop any legislation, and I don't think that would get passed. And second of all, okay, so let's say I'm in the United States and I run an internet company which puts off pictures on the internet, and I don't try at target kids. I mean, if kids come to my site and they have some way of fooling my software and stuff, then they get in. But let's say the U.S. government says, no, you can't have this here. I'm making lots of money off of this. I want to continue. So I move my whole stuff over to Mexico or someplace where it's legal, or there's no one, or maybe illegal, but there's no one that's going to stop me. Mm-hmm. And then, so they say, okay, we're going to put out programs that say that prevent this, and they're going to have kids that have much superior technical knowledge than their parents, I mean, like me, at least for my mom, that would either be able to get over that, or they'll go over to some other kid's house which doesn't have that, or that one kid will all of a sudden become a distributor. I mean, it's like for me, like when I first saw it, I didn't have this direct access, but I knew someone that did. And if, I mean, you try blocking it, there's still going to be that access.
Yeah, so I think my point, which I think maybe isn't entirely clear, is that just in the sense that there are very smart hackers who are very clever about doing things with computers, there are very smart legislators who are very clever about oppressing people. And believe me, if it became, our national agenda to suppress all pornography, whether from foreign, here or abroad, they would do it. And so, it's not hard to imagine how, right? I mean, make it a crime punishable by death to import pornography from overseas, whether it comes over a wire or over the border.
It's certainly impossible for me to see it happening.
All right. So the thrust of my question was not, it appears that you're arguing some kind of objectivist sort of pseudo-economic argument that because, that's where the money flows, it should be allowed to happen, or because, there's really no efficient way to stop it, it should be allowed to happen. But I was actually more interested in the kind of, what is best for the mental health of our children.
Okay. You want to know, given the godlike power to implement whatever you think
best.
That's you're asking for, okay. If I got to your sidetracked. That's something where I mean, I'm a bit confused myself. I think that it can be very beneficial to introduce kids at a somewhat young age, probably a bit older than I was, and not to pornography, but at least to nudity, other than the fallopian tubes of a woman like you have in the class, your high school, phys ed class or whatever that teaches it.
Right, the sort of lowest common denominator,
the bullhorn type thing, and trying to teach it by that. I mean, I think that's something that's something that be a bit further than that's going to educate kids enough to say, I mean, this is all going with there being good parents that would be able to educate their kids, which to say, well, this is what happens, this is how it happens, these are some things that are right, and these are a lot of things that are wrong, and they go wrong far beyond I'm saying they're wrong. They are wrong morally, and depending on what religion you are, you can say they're wrong, you know, even there, and sort of really get into their heads this is wrong. The image that shooting someone with a gun, although not for every kid, but I think for most kids out there, a very large percentile thinks that shooting someone with a gun is pretty wrong, and they both got that from their friends and from their parents, and I think it's possible also to exert that same force to make kids think, like raping a woman or something, like that's wrong. That doesn't, that's totally wrong. Or even trying to do stuff that is wrong. Forcing someone to have sex. I guess that would be rape.
So I have another intriguing little question. So as overlord of the United States, how would you resolve the conflict between a parent's beliefs and, your beliefs, or, the state's beliefs is what's best for the child? So, for example, imagine a hyper-conservative parent who doesn't want their child to have any kind of sex education or any kind of exposure to any of these sort of mature themes. Do you think it's sort of the government's duty to make sure that that children above a certain age, for example, have unfettered access to information like this?
I don't think that the government should say, every library in the United States must have a computer that must have a 24-hour access to pornography. I think I wouldn't say that, and I think in terms of most things.
But why not? I mean, I think so. Would you argue that every library should have a copy of, Huckleberry Finn or whatever the usual banned books are?
Yeah, I would say that. But like most libraries, that should also be where the parents are going to draw the line one way or the other. And I think in libraries, in one sense, there should be some type of them saying, well, you can't do this, just because that could offend a lot of people. And it's one thing to be seeing at your own house. It's another thing to be sort of like displaying this openly, where if it's illegal to walk around nude, why? I mean, I think you can sort of think of the same reasons in terms of it's illegal to have nude pictures displayed openly on your computer at a library. But when you're dealing with someone at home, I mean, the ultra-conservative is going to say sex education, teaching this is all wrong, and they're not going to teach their kid. And that kid might turn out to be fine. That kid might have problems later on that are going to be worse, and that kid really should have had some type of experience when he was young. And that's going to happen either way. But there might be another kid which isn't going to have the experience, which isn't going to have any, well, might have some problems and is going to learn, wow, this is the right way. Or it might be that there are a kid who doesn't know either way and is hopefully going to learn the right way, as opposed to possibly being exposed to something bad later on. I'm probably making no sense.
I'm digesting. I think while I digest that, I'm going to read a PSA, and Ariel will form a question that will clarify. I usually turn to Ariel to clarify my own thinking when it becomes muddled. Okay. So, now through August, be on the lookout when firefighters across the country take to the streets. It's not fires they're fighting, it's muscular dystrophy. As you drive around, you'll see firefighters at street corners and shopping centers asking the public to help fill the boot, literally by dropping spare change into an empty firefighter's boot. Sponsored by the International Association of Firefighters, this campaign is part of their annual drive, which last year raised more than $11 million to benefit the MDA and help the million Americans living with muscle-wasting diseases. This 40-year tradition is the IAFF's, what's IAFF? International Association of Firefighters, biggest fundraiser for MDA, Muscular Dystrophy Association, with fire departments participating in almost every city and town in the United States. For more information about Fill the Boot and about programs for children and adults, call MDA at 1-800-572-1717. Okay.
Well, I think Jake clearly is not comfortable in the overlord position, and you should let him off the hook.
Can I say something about that really quickly? This isn't the topic which I've done that much thinking about. I mean, it's because I'm throwing out the top of things that I think about. And I hope I would never have to make those decisions, because, I'm basing this on things that I know and what I see, but there's a lot that I don't see. And, I mean, if I was some type of, you know, all powerful thing that could make these things, I might see things that would change my mind, and I don't know. So I can't. I'm sure my opinions on a lot of these things will also change in years to come.
So do you think your experience of the internet is typical among your friends?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't think there's. I don't know how many people are out there having cyber sex, although I imagine that most of them are not kids my age. I think actually a decent amount of those are probably people older, seniors in high school would be my age, but kids not, you know, I guess the first couple of years in high school and before that. I forgot what I was about to say.
Do the people that you hang out with who have, you know, comparable experience in the internet, are they mostly guys? Do you have female friends your age where you know what their experience has been like?
I don't. I was sort of wondering that. I know that there's, we have had a few discussions with girls which were sort of enlightening, if anything else, about what they've seen and, you know, about what they see. But these are also, I mean, the people who I generally talk to are people also like me. They're computer geeks and to a certain extent have a bit higher education. So I'm basing this a lot of my friends that that do pretty well in school, and I don't know how typical this would be of kids on the internet. I think most kids that use the internet actively, or at least for something other than email and sports scores, I think this would be somewhat typical. But kids that also do that generally fit into the range I'm talking about anyway.
Mm-hmm. Great. So I'm curious, what did the girls have to say?
I was speaking with a girl not too long ago who was telling me about how her parents have a decent amount of pornography, and I've read a couple of articles in a Playboy which I thought were pretty interesting. And she was saying, I mean, the same thing. It sort of was surprising. She's read things in Playboy and that it's something that's open around her house, or at least available. Although I don't know, I haven't spoken to a lot of girls I'd like to know, actually. But a lot of my friends are guys, and the girls are not as into the internet as the guys are.
Hmm. I'm gonna make a very subtle segue into homosexuality for just a moment. But first, I want to remind our listeners that if the only reason you're not calling is because you don't know the phone number, it's 268-WRCT. That's handy on campus. You can just handily type 89728. Or if you're off campus, that would be 621-9728. Homosexuality question. True or false? Young people today are more or less tolerant of the whole homosexual thing than they would have been 20, 30, 50 years ago.
Overall, yes, I think that they're probably more tolerant. Although I haven't, I've been alive that long to really know how the feelings were of kids my age, that many generations ago. Although it's somewhat surprising of where you go. I live in New Jersey, in a somewhat dense area, and New Jersey is a very diverse state, and where I go to school is pretty diverse, and mostly kids are actually a bit more wealthy in other areas, which might play into this whole thing as well. And I know that it's pretty much accepted there. I mean, there's some kids that have views that it's not accepted, and they try to be vocal, but they generally get shot down by the kids that do think that there's no problem with it.
Kids in your high school who are out of the closet?
They're not out of the closet in the sense that they're walking around yelling at them gay, but if you came up and asked them, they would certainly tell you, and
couples hold hands ever?
I'm sure they do, but most of the people that I know that are gay at school have partners that are outside of the school. Mm. Should be all of them.
What about the prom? The ever important prom question. Have same-sex couples ever gone to your prom?
I think they have.
Interesting. interesting.
Although I can't, I've never gone to the prom myself. I could have. I just, yeah.
It is sort of oppressive.
I had other stuff that I wanted to do. I don't know where they have, although I think overall.
I know I'm torturing tonight, but I have to have a better. You didn't go to the prom because why? There was stuff you had to do that night?
No, but I did.
You were like a very special blossom on TV that night that you just could not miss.
Right? Yeah, for me, it's sort of like, okay, I got two options. I can either sort of sit at home, I call up my friends, you know, go out to do something, use my computer for an hour, and not have to worry about homework. Right. I don't do any drugs. I don't drink. Or I can go over to this prom, which has kids, which I mostly don't like a whole lot. I can watch them get drunk. I can watch them tell stupid stories of things that I was never involved with to begin with, because I never hung out with those kids. I was just like, you know, I don't need to spend however much it is to go to this prom to do that. I can
be impressed, yeah.
Only go to other people's proms. That's my advice.
There should be a kind of anti-prom for all the sort of, all the oppressed kids.
Yeah, actually, it's sort of really cool. A lot of people wanted me to go to the prom. Two of my art teachers sort of said, jokingly, they wanted to, like, there's a lot of people encouraging me to go to the prom. They sort of said they wanted to just buy me some type of, like a mannequin or something that I can bring there, and they pay for me to my ticket stuff, and I have to go around there and act like, you know, she was my date for the prom.
Would you try to like pretend that was a real person? What would be the point?
It'd be like a performance art piece.
Exactly. I do a lot of performance art, so I mean it would pretty much be that. I wouldn't.
That would be incredible, actually.
I mean, I would
serve as your trophy wife.
And... yeah, I'd probably go so far in pretending. Although I sort of, you know, I joke about the fact that my computer is my girlfriend. You know, it's as if, you know, I honestly think that, but it's sort of like, you know, it's the same thing. And like, if anyone starts giving me a hard time, like, oh, you have a girlfriend, but yes, I do. You know, her name is Jane. It's in my computer. And I'll sort of say this, or I'll be a social guy with my friends. I'll be bored. I'll pick up the phone. This whole time, my ear. I did this once for like 10 minutes. Obviously, letting the phone ring, and sort of asking, well, who are you calling? I said, I'm calling Jane. Like, wow, I need a girlfriend. I'm like, yeah, I'm calling Jane. And what I was really doing is I was actually calling my dorm room. I was calling my modem that wasn't picking up, and I was actually testing it at the time to see whether it was going to work or not. You know, but I convinced everyone at the party that I had a girlfriend that I was calling that wasn't home, and I wanted to invite her to come over. Although that falls in the whole thing of performance art, which I do a lot of as well.
Yeah, it sounds like you could really go somewhere with that whole computer girlfriend mannequin thing.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't... I don't think I would have any type of mental problem thinking that it would be. I treat it in a somewhat of a joking way. Yeah, I'm happy to do stuff like that.
It's really tempting to wonder how far, you know, using today's technology, how close you could bring a sort of computer program to sort of the 1950s model of suburban housewife, right? I mean, something that cooks and cleans and, you know, is receptive to your sexual acts and basically never complains. I mean, I think that's within the reach of modern technology, especially if you go to www.realdoll.com, a website
I was wondering if you were there.
Discovered recently, which is technology that creates this incredible lifelike sex dolls that are nearly indistinguishable from the real thing, although I believe they're all female at the moment, which is kind of disappointing.
I was reading an article about them, and I think they said they were starting with a male line.
Excellent.
We're talking $5,000 here.
You know, so that's a high-end computer. I mean, you know, if you have your priorities straight, you could, and you know, you could get an NEA grant for that probably. Or in the old days, you could get an NEA grant.
Well, I mean, there's a period of time for a while where I mean, just the whole big thing was like computer artificial intelligence. How long would it be until I would know where I'm speaking to a computer or someone else? And that sort of whole idea has died down a bit, but sort of falls along that hole. Now,
yeah.
What are some interesting examples of performance art that you've done? You said this is something you're really interested in.
Oh, yeah. I love doing performance art. I don't know.
I mean, I don't actually know what performance art is. Is it sort of like standing on a stage and smearing yourself with feces or what?
Chocolate. Usually it's chocolate.
Okay.
Maybe they could be considered performance art. I mean, I like drawing stuff I like to do. I like to have to be somewhat more sophisticated. I'll give you one of the things that I've done that I liked. That's a while long ago. I brought a potted plant out into the stage, which I had I put a tarp out earlier on the stage. I put the potted plant right down there. I put a chair over there, and for about 5 minutes, I proceeded to have a conversation with the potted plant. I was just talking to it, pretending like it was responding, to the whole audience. And slowly as the conversation went on, I started getting more and more annoyed at this potted plant. For something that the audience didn't know. I just was responding to stuff they were saying. Until finally, in a fit of rage, I just couldn't take it, and I got up, and I jumped in the potted plant. And then I started this whole thing where I was very sad, and I was crying. And then and after that, I came back on a bit later, and I did a whole performance. It was sort of more like a lecture of why I did that and what I feel about the murder of plants. And I ended up bringing in talking about carrots and eating carrots on stage. It's some weird stuff. Most of it's I have an idea and I improv everything else.
That sounds pretty incredible. So who is your audience? What is the forum for this sort of expression?
They change. I'm happy to do
school.
It's at my school. I'm now the president of my school's dramatic society.
Okay.
And yet I take art. I'm more interested in art and computers. But a lot of these things were more of a coffee house / just performance night type things. I've done various different things in different I did a traveling acting trip a while ago where I went around and I ended up doing stuff in Boston, which was really cool. Stuff which I can't believe I did now. Or now I can't believe I did. It wasn't really performance art, but just getting on top of things and shouting at people in Quincy Market, literally having 1,000 people turn over and stare at me while I scream my head off about coming to a play.
I mean, actually, Boston's one of the better places to do that because people are pretty inured, right? Crazy people.
I mean, there's actually a decent amount of places where you can do stuff, and people are open about it. And there's also a lot of...
Did you perform in Boston? I mean, did people come to your...
Well, it was part of a trip where it was me and a bunch of our kids, and it was all arranged and very safe and stuff. Came up with a play, and we wrote this play, and we directed this play. And then we travel around to different summer camps and perform this play.
Oh, okay.
And then, one of the last big performances we're going to do it in Boston, like a street show. And I was in charge of getting people's attention to come here. And that's when I sort of said, forget about whatever they say. I'm going to go up there and I'm going to embarrass myself and hopefully get a lot of people to think that this is what's going to happen when I come over there.
And that's kind of internally soothing, actually, to me, because, next time somebody does something really disturbing to me, I can just assume that it's performance art and that they're not actually... They're not actually going to hurt me.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are certain distinctions in performance art where, I mean, when is enough? And also, I mean, I think things should have... I don't think people should do... Well, I'm not impressed by people that do performance art for really shock value. Or if they just do performance art, look at me, I'm doing this, I'm smearing feces on me, aren't I different, stare at me, whatever. I think there should be, or I'd like to see some type of general message behind it, other than, just for shock value. But that's just me.
Well, no, I think that's definitely a worthy... this woman who does smear feces all over herself, or
she
chocolate.
She smears chocolate frosting. Yes, I've seen Karen Finley smear chocolate frosting over herself and sprinkle it with bean sprouts and little candy hearts. I think she had a message.
Bean sprouts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying...
She said the bean sprouts represented sperm. I don't remember what the candy hearts represented.
Well, potentially OFA, I guess, but swimming in a sea of feces, right? I mean, she no doubt has a pretty vivid message.
She was a vivid person.
So, there's that woman that has brings the speculum on stage and allows people to look up her vagina.
Oh, I've seen her too.
Really?
That's Annie Sprinkle.
Oh,
I saw her
Karen
recently.
Finley. Okay.
Right.
And
I saw Annie Sprinkle a couple of months ago. She wasn't letting people She didn't have the speculum, though, at the time. She was showing clips from her old porn movies.
Oh, that's fantastic. Where do you... Do these people come to Pittsburgh? Where do you see these people?
No, I saw Karen Finley in Hartford and Annie Sprinkle in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I wish there was more performance art where I am.
So we're in New Jersey?
Yeah, I was wondering if there's actually...
You from New York.
There's actually a decent amount. Yeah, I mean, there's... I mean, the Knitting Factory, for those of you who you know, the New York area is a big place for it all.
Mm-hmm.
And I, Yeah, I don't have a car. so I have a hard time getting around. Although they're locally, I mean, every now and then there's, like, these really big things that just pop up. You know, almost like grassroots avant-garde movements and stuff. It's sort of interesting. Yeah, it's around. Just, you know, look for it enough, hard enough, and you'll find it.
I'm waiting for an incredibly probing question to occur to me, and it's not happening. I know. I'll be a public service announcement.
Not again.
This is my duty.
Okay.
You can make a difference in your community by becoming a volunteer at Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. Individuals and groups of volunteers are needed immediately in the food bank's repack center in McKeesport, where grocery donations are sorted and boxed for the benefit of hungry people. For more information about how to get involved, call 412-672-4949. Okay.
Gee, that was almost performance art.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this whole show could be considered performance art if it could ever be determined what our message was.
Then you get the huge question of what is art. I mean, that's the question I've been bombarded with for the last 3 weeks of this program.
So let's wrap the topic back around, and do you think something can be art and pornography?
Can there be, sure. Definitely. Like, I'm not, you know, there's sort of like, you know, like the singer you were talking about looking up someone's vagina. But like, that's the type of thing I don't think it should be like actively going to see all the time.
How old do you think you should be before you get to see a real cervix?
Wow.
Of a mature age. And that's sort of, I mean...
35.
Right. I'm 32 and I've never seen a cervix, so well, I guess.
I never have either.
And I mean, maturity is also a thing where, I mean...
The cervix is like...
It's way in the back.
This is the mouth of the uterus, is that right? Do I remember my anatomy lessons correctly? Okay.
I mean, but also, you know, kids being mature is a big thing. I mean, there's kids that are people that aren't mature and they're, you know, and they're old, and there's kids that are mature very young. And it's also another thing where parents have to sort of look and see what's going on and understand when a kid is mature enough.
To handle that cervix.
Can truly arousing imagery, including women, children, animals, and the like, you know...
And ski poles.
But you know, can something that's... Is it possible that something... Is it possible for something to be really arousing and actually sexually exciting to be considered art, or must there forever be this decision between pornography and...
I think he just answered that.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, you weren't paying attention. I was emphasizing again.
I certainly don't see any.
I'm sorry. I thought I was
you're having too much fun playing with your socks.
I'm almost completely disrobed here. Okay, 30 more seconds of probing questions.
All right. Let's make him define pornography.
In 30 seconds? I don't know how you define pornography. You can define it in dozens of different ways. You can take a straight approach where...
Well, it sounded like you were making a distinction earlier between just nudity and pornography.
Yes. I generally think that pornography is something that's made with the intention of arousal or the intention of something that happened next, whereas nudity is just... can be many different things. I mean, sort of like... You know, in one of the art classes in my program, I'm taking it, but they have a nude female figure. I wouldn't consider that pornography. I consider that nudity and drawing and for drawers to observe the human body. And, you know, when I draw that, I'm not a drawing teacher. I always want to draw. But there's different, like I wouldn't call that pornography. I call some woman trying to, or, you know, being paid by someone to hopefully get men turned on and to do something else, either to buy something or pay for more of it. I call that pornography.
Fabulous. And on that note, we are out of time, and I want to thank Ariel for joining us, and we hope to have you back many times as a future Loveline Sex Talk co-host. And Jake, thank you especially for joining us. It's been rewarding, educational, and we hope to have you back as well. And to the youth of the Internet youth of America, we salute you.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome.
Use Linux.
Use what?
Use Linux.
What, is this an operating system?
Yes, this is an operating system.
Wow.
I gotta do a quick promo.
Yeah, that was actually...
Linux, I think we usually say it.
Linux, I say.
Linux.
Yeah,
Linux.
Linux.
But you're saying Linux.
Linux.
Linux. There's this disturbing final syllable throwing us all off.
I say it the way that the programmer, the guy who wrote it, says it.
Really?
Yeah, and he's Swedish.
He's
Finnish, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Linux.
He says it like that?
Huh? Yeah, he speaks with a big accent.
Well, you know, we tried to get through a whole show without talking about operating systems, but we failed. Maybe next week. Our producer is trying to cut me off, so good night.